Welcome to Motivated to Lead Podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Glad you could join us again for our podcast this week. Each week, we interview a leader. This week, we're going to be talking with Clint Carnell. Clint is the CEO of the Hydrofacial Company and also is the founder and chairman at Orange Twist. He has a background of helping organizations grow, and he has some great insights he's going to share that he's learned in his career, as well as leadership lessons that he's going to share with us today. I know you'll enjoy our conversation with Clint. Clint, can you give us just, first off, give us a little bit of overview of your career?
Sure. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate you having me. I came out of university, traditional sales and marketing track. Was with large companies in the surgical field, healthcare, Johnson & Johnson, Chiron, Gambro. Did a small diversion to learn finance with a bank software company, and my executive chops really started in my 30s. I ran Bausch & Lomb's surgical division for North America, and then I guess I was about 35, I joined my first venture-backed company called Thermage. We took that company public in 06. I was COO for 6 years. And then I started in my 40s my CEO career, and I've led a combination of venture-backed, public, and private equity-backed companies. My current situation is I founded a company called Orange Twist, and I'm running a company for Linden Capital and DW called the Hydrofacial Company, two high-flying, growth-oriented companies that we're having a lot of fun with.
Great. And this is one of our favorite questions to ask CEOs is, if you were to go back and talk to a 22-year-old Clint, what advice would you give him knowing what you know now?
Gosh, I think big, take risks, and it's the proverbial, like, follow your dreams. I think when we're in our 20s, you get a lot of advice. Sometimes we play it safe. We try to do the right thing. And the successful people I know, when I look back, really accelerated their careers by pursuing big ideas, working really hard. And I think ultimately that both inspires people to keep moving you up, whatever your dream ladder is, and also people following you. So I would just say think big.
Great. You've led a number of organizations that are high growth. And tell us a little bit some of the lessons you've learned of working with organizations that are growing quickly and rapidly, and give us a little bit of your thoughts around that.
You hire great people, you know, really work hard to hire nines and tens. Nines and tens attract nines and tens, sevens attract fives, fives attract threes. If you're in a high growth organization, people are your best asset. And so I'd really encourage any leader, regardless of the industry, to hire great, great people. When you have a problem in business, you hire a great person, all of a sudden your problem goes away. And I sometimes, you never regret firing somebody that you probably should have much sooner.
Tell me a little bit about culture and the importance of it, and how do you manage culture in the organization?
It's the most important part of a company's financial performance is the culture. As CEO, you own the vision for the organization, the type of people and culture, and the financial performance. And ironically, we spend a lot of time on financial performance. In the end, you can pick a strategy. Just ensure that you hire the right people, that you have a common core set of values and things that are important to the organization, and the rest tends to take care of itself. Ultimately, the CEO must exhibit the values that are up on the wall, otherwise they fall on deaf ears with the rank and file.
So have you walked into a situation where the culture maybe wasn't what you thought it should be, and how do you affect change as far as a leader?
Yeah, it's important. I think, you know, communication is one of the CEO's primary obligations. Continue to reinforce the vision. You can't do that enough. Exhibit the characteristics that are important and that you have on the wall. And ultimately, people will look to their leaders and understand what's right and wrong. There's kind of an unwritten language in companies. And that's why companies that have great culture, it's a huge multiplier. And companies that don't, you can feel it when you walk in the door. So ultimately, it's a lot of logic. Or it's a little logic and a lot of magic to make sure they have a really good corporate culture.
And I'm sure you've had some mentors in your life that have kind of helped you as far as in your career. Is that mentors, are they important to you? And what are some of the mentors that you've had in your career?
incredibly important. When I look back at my career, I would say the mentors are the most influential things. Not that different than coaches or teachers as you're a teenager, a child. In Orange Twist, my most recent venture, I actually have three former mentors, bosses that are investors going all the way back into my 20s and follow me, through the last three decades. They taught me much like a parent and a kid, as I became more successful in my career, we learned from each other, they've invested. And it's amazing the things that I've continued to learn from them. So surround yourself with great mentors, because what may be a learning later becomes a friendship and someone you can rely on that understands you, probably as well as anybody, and they can be invaluable in your career.
Talk a little bit from the time that you moved from kind of a functional leader role in heading, sales and marketing to that CEO seat.
Sure.
What was that transition like, and what would you tell somebody that's moving from kind of that functional role to that CEO or C-suite role?
Yeah, that's probably the most difficult. It's hard to tell who will exactly become a competent chief executive. When I was coming up through the sales and marketing ranks, there's this view that your team, your first team, you're the leader of, and often you're at conflict with other areas of the organization. When you become the CEO, you're typically not the expert in the other functions. And so you have to learn how to set a common vision, understand what's important for that functional area, and then both respect expertise, but also make sure that the team functions like any other team, that everybody's core expertise contributes to the greater good. Don't be intimidated by it, but do respect it. And that balance can be the difference in success for a CEO or someone being unsuccessful. In my own career, I tend to be very deferential and hire very good heads of sales and marketing because I know that's my strong suit. Mm-hmm. So I try to give them, if anything, more room and less that I weigh in. I mean, I actually look at the other functional areas probably with a little bit more scrutiny to try to balance out our natural strengths.
Interesting. So if you were to tell somebody as they're going into that, I think a lot of times people think that because you're the CEO, you have no, you don't have a boss. And sure that you've learned that lesson early, but how do you work with your board and those that are investing? What are some advice that you'd give somebody who maybe hasn't worked for a board before?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. It's, I once was told the job of a CEO is pretty simple. You establish the vision, you set the culture and the type of people that the organization looks to attract, and you set the performance goals and everything else you delegate. And it takes a little while, I think, to really understand how to be a competent CEO, because really your job is managing the constituents that affect the business. So the board is a very valuable constituent. You need to communicate with them often. It's important to bring bad news early, to let good news be the result of the team. It's important to lead your team. And it's important to ensure that the health of the organization culturally is what you need to perform against those objectives. So often we only talk about the financial objectives. Usually it's a common vision. It's hiring great people, managing the performance, but that financial performance falls out of having a really healthy organization. And the CEO's job is to balance those constituents for a healthy ecosystem. Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm sure that you, as you're managing your own career, the importance of continuing to grow and develop. Any books that you've read over the years or recently that you think would be a good read for anybody that is kind of that upcoming leader?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of flavor of the day type mm-hmm. of books, but ones that have influenced my career, Jim Collins' Good to Great, I think is always a good one. Hiring the right people, making sure they're in the right seats, exiting people that aren't right. Discipline of Execution by Larry Bossidy and Ram Shram was really good to me because so often, I work for a gentleman who used to say that execution eats strategy for breakfast every day. I think, if you pick a strategy, but then you really execute against it with smart people, that's, I think, very valuable. And then recently I picked up a book called The Private Equity Playbook. Private equity is a mystery sometimes as people get into it as executives. But what I think it allowed me to do, like any book, is to have empathy and understand the other's position so that you understand what you're trying to achieve collectively. The more I've done this where I'm an operator or an investor, it's important to align the financial resources and the operating team's objectives. If you do that well, it's amazing how that 1+1 can equal 3. So It's not any book specifically. I just think it's important to keep reading to open your mind.
Right. Any technology or gadgets that you've had that you think have made you more productive?
Gosh, I mean, I'm sure no. First, say it, the iPhone is like an extension of your brain, and it's really amazing when I think about. I think at Solta we changed out the entire team from Blackberries to iPhone in 07, and to think about not having the technology at our hands now is at our fingertips is really quite astounding, and so without question, the iPhone has been the biggest change and continues to be probably my most useful technological product.
Right. Tell me a little bit as far as outside of work, you know, it's important for people to kind of unwind, recharge. What do you enjoy doing outside of work?
Spending time with my kids, you know, hands down with my family. You know, it's I'm certainly not the CEO at home. My kids let me know exactly what they think. And it's refreshing and aggravating all at the same time. Just sent my daughter to college, and my son just became a freshman in high school. But it's just so much fun seeing them become adults. I play a little golf, and I use that term loosely, in that the golf course plays me. And it's a really cool joke to spend 4 hours of your weekend punishing yourself. But those two things are my little getaways.
Good. Any parting advice that you would give a new leader?
Yeah, have fun. I mean, so often we don't stop to smell the proverbial roses. Every stage is sealed. It's the journey, not the destination. And so just remember that these are the good old days. So enjoy the challenges, enjoy the rewards, becoming a leader. And most importantly, remember that the idea of being a servant leader is probably one of the most empowering things that you can do for you and your people, because leadership's a privilege. And I certainly have had fun doing it, ups and downs. It's really a rewarding way to make a living.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Clint. This has been great. Enjoyed your insights, and wish you continued success in your companies.
Cool. Thanks so much, Mark. Good to see you.
Absolutely. Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.